Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. We're keeping an eye on the baseball. We talk some Hawks. We talk some Braves. And now we'll continue to break down the upcoming Monday Night Football matchup. Buffalo coming to Mercedes-Benz Stadium in prime time. Monday Night Football. I don't know if the assignment I'm giving our next guest is necessarily going to be her favorite thing to do, because I'm essentially going to ask her all the different ways of how to beat her favorite team. But that's what we're going to do with our next guest, because Maggie Gray from the Infinity Sports Network, Maggie and Perloff, joins me. Maggie, unfortunately, I'm going to ask you again about six ways till Sunday about how to take down Josh Allen and the high-powered Bills. Let's start with last week before we move forward. What did you see from the Patriots that allowed a team that was averaging 33 points a game to actually and finally get slowed down?
Yeah, Chris, thanks so much. You know, so I grew up in upstate New York. I'm a lifelong Buffalo Bills fan, so that's where my allegiance lies, but I try to be very objective, and I think it's sometimes harder on the team than just a neutral observer, because, you know, you have that little extra oomph. And you can't help where you're from, right? So, you know, Mike Vrabel has the blueprint. Mike Vrabel has the blueprint. So I think what happened to Buffalo, and this is why I'm not necessarily panicked, although I felt a little bit better about playing your Atlanta Falcons after what happened to Carolina as opposed to what happened against the Commanders. But here's the thing. You know, Buffalo had 11 penalties in that game against New England. They had three turnovers. And, you know, that's just not a formula to win. And even for a high-powered offense and an MVP and Josh Allen, you know, that amount of penalties and playing that sloppy is just going to doom any team. And, you know, Drake May had a second half that was unbelievable. I mean, he was doing his best Josh Allen impersonation. I believe he only missed one throw in the entire second half. And, you know, they exposed some things about Buffalo. And I'm happy to, scout and do, you know, counterintelligence for you, because if I can see it, that means the Falcons can definitely see it. So there's some very glaring issues that the Bills, despite being one of the best teams in the NFL and off to a 4-1 start, there's definitely some issues that the Patriots showed on that Sunday night game.
Well, the one thing that I'm going to argue, and I'll die on this hill, is that the way to stop Josh Allen is Bijan Robinson. And he is the key to extending drives, bleeding clock, and keeping that high-powered offense and the MVP off the field. The one thing that Josh does have in his favor is the Falcons are essentially starting / rotating in heavily four rookies, so he would be able to, in theory, pick them apart, but Maggie can't do it if he's not on the field.
No, that's the perfect formula. You know, you have to be able to run the ball against Buffalo, and, you know, if you are watching, let's say, even just the primetime games, you're not locked into, like, the 1 o'clock slate. You know, before Derrick Henry fumbled the ball in the opening night, if you want to go back to the first week of the season, Derrick Henry was running through Buffalo. You know, their defense is, you know, a lot of high draft picks, and, you know, you have a defensive head coach, but the Bills' defense is certainly susceptible to the run. Now, their secondary is also a little bit leaky as well. So, you know, you guys should be able to move the ball. There's a lot of weapons that Atlanta has, and there's going to be yards to be gained, especially here at home. You know, That is the one key to the game. I think it's Bijan Robinson on your side, and I think it's James Cook on the Buffalo side, because, listen, Josh Allen gets all the credit, and boy, does he deserve it. Like, he is the franchise, and he, you know, is he's the architect. But the Bills really become dangerous when James Cook is running the ball, because then it opens, obviously, up everything for everyone else. And that was something that had kind of been missing from Buffalo when they would get into these big shootouts with Patrick Mahomes and the 13 seconds game and all those terrible memories that I now have deep imprinted into my psyche. the focusing back on the run game and James Cook's ability to keep the chains moving is everything. So I actually think that the running backs are probably on both sides the key to this game on Monday night.
The weapons that he does have outside of the backfield and Dalton Kincaid and Keon Coleman, how have they come along? Because I know before the season there was an endless droning about not giving Josh enough weapons this season.
Yeah, I mean, they have the mantra, everybody eats, you know, and this is kind of like a rebuke of Steph Diggs, who certainly got the last laugh on Sunday night when he had one of his best games in 2 years against Buffalo. But it was the idea that you don't need a number one receiver. And, you know, I think that the Kansas City Chiefs have kind of done something like this, even though Kelce for a long time, you know, could be thought of as a number one receiver, Tyreek Hill, obviously. But then they kind of went away from that, and it was like, all right, I guess it's going to be Juju Smith-Schuster and Hollywood Brown. And I think the Bills are kind of doing a similar type of thing. And Dalton Kincaid has been coming along. He had one of his best games, actually, in the last game against the Patriots. And if you're susceptible to tight ends, then he can be a real problem. You know, to me, Keon Coleman, you know, he's not all the way there yet. And, you know, he was benched for the first series against the Patriots for some disciplinary thing. Like, I'm not going to try to make a mountain out of a molehill there, but, you know, they needed him in year two to take a big step forward. He's got a couple really good catches, but then at times, you know, can also sort of disappear. You know, Khalil Shakir, not a household name, but somebody who Falcons fans might want to get familiar with. You know, basically Josh's kind of safety blanket. And they have this sort of, you have no idea where it's coming from. The issue for me from the Buffalo side, if we're being honest about this, you know, they still are relying so much on Josh running the ball. And, you know, you're not going to be able to get that out of him. He's going to want to be that guy when it's 3rd and 7 or 3rd and 8, and all of a sudden everyone's covered. Like, he's going to take off, and he's going to initiate contact, and he's going to try to draw flags, and he's going to do all those things that are going to annoy the crap out of you if you're a Falcons fan. But to be honest, like, it's still so much on his shoulders, especially if the run game can't get going. So for all the kind of no-name offense, I mean, Josh is still the last, like, I don't say line of defense, but even if you watched against the Saints, the final score really did not tell the story there. Josh had to come up with some major third down conversions with his legs to really put some space between the Bills and New Orleans, let alone Atlanta, who comes in with way more firepower.
Talking all things Falcons, Bills, and we'll hit some NFL headlines as well in just a second with our good friend Maggie Gray. Make sure you check out Maggie and Perloff every morning on the Infinity Sports Network. Listen, I don't say do something just to do it, but the fact that the Browns are still dealing with Shedeur Sanders controversy, Maggie, I'm sure you talked about it on your show. It looks like they might have found a little something in Dylan Gabriel, but they come out today and say Sanders is more likely than not going to still be QB3. What do you make of that situation in Cleveland? Should they do it, or should they only make football moves there?
Yeah, you know, this has been a circus from the start. And, you know, with the Cleveland Browns, there's no bottom. Like, there's no end. Anytime you think that it can't get crazier or a little more dysfunctional or a little more confusing, they will find a way to top themselves. So congrats, I guess. You know, to me, listen, I thought this whole thing was kind of odd with Shedeur Sanders. First, I thought the fall in the draft, let's just go all the way back to that, was like way too extreme. You know, we watched him play at Colorado. I don't think he looked like a fifth-round pick. I'm not Mel Kiper, but, you know, we've all been watching football for a long time, and the fact that he kind of maybe blew the pre-draft process, I thought that may have been a little bit overblown. But, you know, and I was all in Shador's camp and on his side, and I still am. Not that you need to take sides, but I'm curious to see how he, you know, if he ends up sort of getting the last laugh, if you will, on an NFL that kind of seemed to sort of give him the stiff arm on draft weekend. And I thought he'd been handling himself pretty well. And I'm going to be honest with you, Chris, that weird interview that he did in front of his locker the day before Dylan Gabriel got named as the starter and Joe Flacco went to the bench. And he did this weird interview where he's standing in front of his locker in front of reporters. They're asking him questions and he's pretending to, like, he's mouthing answers and there's no words coming out. And it seemed to be a rebuke of Rex Ryan, the former Jets coach, who said something about him on an ESPN morning show. I don't know. That to me kind of screamed, all right, are we focused on the right things here or the wrong things? And I have no idea if that's going to impact, if that impacted the Browns' decision or if that impacts anything about him on the field, because he's used to having a lot of noise and a lot of people talking about him because he's Deion's son. But to be honest, I was like, man, is there a maturity issue here? Is there things that still need to be worked out? Because I thought that was one of the more bizarre things I've ever seen out of anyone, let alone a third string quarterback who's done absolutely nothing in the league yet. I thought it was weird. So I don't know if maybe this is the Browns trying to send a message like, dude, you're not ready yet. You might still not get it of how you have to act more like a CEO if you want to be a quarterback in the NFL.
Are the Ravens done?
I think they are. I think this is like the season from hell for them. And, you know, I think that I saw the news today that Lamar Jackson still didn't practice today. So obviously that's not trending in the best direction. Who knows? Who knows? You know, they can always end up being healthy. But I think they're going to be super careful here. And, you know, you hate to waste any year where a quarterback of Lamar's stature is in his prime. But this defense is just not nearly good enough. I don't know if they're able to be good enough. They turned it around last year, and the defense was much better at the end of the year than the beginning. But I don't know if I see that help all coming back and them getting their acts together. And with, you know, Lamar's your franchise, you know, how do you even mess around a little bit with his health? And hamstrings are really tricky. You guys know, like, it, they come in, they come out, they can be very frustrating, they can linger. So I think they're going to be uber careful here. And, you know, I kind of see them like slow playing this with Lamar. And if this becomes a season where you pack it in a little bit and say, all right, we'll get him next year, I could see them having the, you know, John Harbaugh obviously has a Super Bowl winning head coach. I know fans gripe about him, but I don't think he's on the hot seat. And I think the fan base like is willing to say, listen, all right, this was just a terrible year. We'll regroup.
The Philadelphia Eagles, Maggie, they're like that couple that always fights. You question them when you're hanging out with them alone. You're like, dude, dudette, why are you going back to them? You're toxic for each other. But then they get back together and you see them posting on Instagram and all looks right in the world again. Is this just another one of those drama-filled seasons, or is there actually legit concern this time around that the offense is in trouble a little bit?
Okay, so my co-host is Andrew Perloff. You guys may remember him as McLovin from the Dan Patrick Show for 12 years, and he eats, sleeps, breathes Philadelphia sports. It's so annoying. But anyway, he is so worried about this team. And so when he gets worried about them, I'm like, all right, well, now I think I have to take this seriously, because I'll be honest, you know, last year we had A.J. Brown reading self-help books in the middle of a game. And I was like, well, this is obviously terrible, and the pass game is awful. And what do? They went to the Super Bowl, and they absolutely crushed the dynasty of our era in the Kansas City Chiefs. So I can never tell the interpersonal, how much that, like, actually matters in these guys and their relationships. I think what does matter is the offense has just completely lost its way. And I think that is real. You know, the relationships and how guys interact with each other and A.J. Brown being upset and all that, okay, we've all seen that before. They've gotten through it. But they have a new offensive play caller. I'm telling you, that guy is not popular right now in Philadelphia. You know, I don't know if Nick Sirianni is going to take over play calling responsibilities or get a handle on that, but this offense is capable of so much more. And, you know, you got young guys on defense. Your offensive line has been a little bit banged up, but you still have enough. And, you know, Saquon Barkley is averaging like 3 yards a carry. Like, that's not going to do it. Last year, he was averaging 5 yards a carry. He had so many touches last year. This might be like, you know, catching up to him possibly. And the offensive line is not as good. But as far as like long term, I still think they're going to be there at the end. They seem to be able to find a way to navigate these tricky waters. And as soon as you count them out, they're right back in it.
Before I let you go, which AFC South team are you buying more as a legit contender, Indianapolis or Jacksonville?
I got a hot take here. I actually think when all is said and done, it's still going to be Houston. I know that sounds crazy. I know. And Houston has been, you know, except for when they played the Ravens, they've been not good. And I understand they have a losing record right now. But, you know, I want to see Indianapolis, you know, outside of, going to the West Coast. Like, I want to see them play a few more legitimate teams. Okay. And I'm not, you know, I live in New York. I was on WFAN during the whole Daniel Jones era. So this is not even like leftover from that, but they've played Miami. They should have lost to Denver. Then they go to Tennessee. The Rams game, to be fair, they probably should have won that game. And then they got to play the Raiders. And up next is Arizona. Like, I just haven't seen enough to tell you that the Colts are for real. And I feel like Jacksonville has been showing me for 20 years that they'll find the banana peel. So I still want to wait and see on that. I think Houston has the defense. I know their offensive line is still sketchy, but I do think CJ Stroud is a legit star. So I'm waiting for that offense to get back on track. And I think when they do, ultimately this will still be the Texans division.
Maggie, really appreciate it as always. We'll check you out, Infinity Sports Network, every morning from 6 to 10 with Andrew Perloff. Thanks for the time. We'll chat soon.
Appreciate it. I would say good luck to you guys on Monday, but only a little bit.
Well, we know you don't mean it. That's why I didn't even say it. It's not even worth saying it. Thanks, Maggie.
Okay, thank you.
All right, that is Maggie Gray there of Infinity Sports Network. When we get back, I got a ton of Falcon sound that you need to hear. Xavier Watts, how about our rookie of the month, Caden Ellis, our stud linebacker, and Coach Ra, all dishing on this Monday night matchup. We'll hear that next. It's Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app, Chris Thomas tonight.